Cheryl, you've just published an interesting paper in the Canadian Journal of Public Health, and it's dealing with the impact of racism and prescription drug use by Aboriginal people. Perhaps you could just explain that a little bit more for me, please.
Sure. When we're thinking about factors that may be contributing to prescription drug addiction, we often look at individuals. So we look at things like previous addictions, mental health issues, previous trauma in life, but we often aren't looking at bigger social and structural factors that surround people that might also be influencing their decisions. Sometimes we do think about traumatic experiences that could be leading to addictions, because we often know people cope with life trauma using alcohol and drugs, but usually we confine that focus to things like domestic violence they may be experiencing or child abuse in the past. So it's, I find in the literature, not that common sometimes to think about issues of prescription drug abuse in terms of those larger social and structural factors that may also be influencing people's behavior. And so this study really thought about that. And when we look at health inequities in different populations, a social factor that we really see in the literature is the experience of racism. So we know that racism is a social determinant of health for many populations around the world. It's an extremely stressful experience that causes a lot of psychological distress and feelings of needing to try to escape or cope with those feelings.
So where did you get the information from?
So this information was collected from Indigenous adults living in Edmonton in 2010. On average, people in the study had lived in Edmonton for about 15 years. People who were recruited for this study, we put posters and information up around the city telling people we were doing an Aboriginal health study. But we didn't give any other details on what the study was about. So people came and filled out surveys about different types of experiences they may have had in their life, including experience of racism, both in childhood and adulthood. And they answered health questions, things like suicide, addictions, and other health-related issues.
So when you look at prescription drug use, how are you defining that?
Yeah, so this study looked at prescription drug addiction. And so we used a measure called the DUDIT, Drug Use Disorders Identification Test. So it's the most widely used screen for drug addiction in the world. So if you were to go into your doctor's office, say that a person came into their doctor's office, they started to have some tests that say that suggested their body is struggling with a substance, alcohol or drugs, and the doctor thinks this individual might be having some problems with substance misuse. They're going to give you this 11-item screen to determine if you actually are struggling with drug addiction or alcohol. And based on your score, they're going to decide if they need to send you on for psychiatric testing for a formal diagnosis of alcoholism or drug addiction. So this is not a diagnostic test, but it is the most reliable screen we have.
When you were looking at the statistics that you were pulling out of this rather large study, what is it that really stood out for you that made you actually look specifically at, there must be something going on here with prescription drugs and racism? That's so specific.
Yeah, and so I looked at factors that seem to be associated with using illegal drugs, so things like crystal meth, cannabis, ecstasy. And then I also looked at things that were associated, people having trouble with those drugs, illegal drugs. And then I looked also at people who are having trouble with prescription drug addiction. So I looked at different factors. I looked at things like, have you experienced poverty in childhood? Do you experience poverty as an adult? Unemployment, child abuse, people who had gone into residential school, for example, or had gone into foster care. So those sorts of traumas. So I looked at educational attainment, how much education they received, other factors that could be associated with prescription drug addiction and illicit drug addiction.
So then when you look at this specific area of racism and linking that to prescription drug use, how did you figure that out? What kind of a scale or measure did you use?
Oh, that's a great question. So racism was measured by how many situations in a person's life that they were experiencing discrimination out of a 9 potential situations in a 1-year period. So examples were at work, one experience, trying to find work, a second experience, seeking health care, something to do with police. If you had involvement with police, did you experience discrimination? Financial, seeking financial services, did you experience discrimination? At school, if you were going to university or college, in public spaces, or seeking goods and services like going to a store. So there was many different out of 9. So a person could have a score of 0 and did not experience discrimination in any of those situations in the past year, or a maximum of 9. I experienced discrimination in every single situation. So we had a range from across these about 400 people. Some said none. Usually those were people who were Métis. They told me I have blue eyes. People don't know I'm Aboriginal. And then all the way up, we had scores of 9 for some people that they'd experienced in every situation. And why that matters is what we found in the data is for every additional situation that a person had experienced racism. So say they regularly experienced discrimination at work, but then they took night classes at college, but they didn't experience it there. So say we had a person who did. They had experience at work, and then they went to their classes, and they also experienced discrimination from students or teachers there. So that's 2 situations versus 1. A person with 2 situations, on average, their score on prescription drug addiction went up by 0.5 point for each additional situation that they experienced racism. And that's 0.5 point is significant because if you're a female, you only need a score of 2 on this scale to be suggestive of perhaps a prescription drug addiction that you need formal diagnostic testing for. If you're a male, you need a score of 6 or more for an MD to determine that maybe you need further diagnostic testing. So for, one additional situation, a 0.5 point increase on this drug addiction score is quite significant.
In your article, you've taken this a little bit further, too, because you've also thrown the link to post-traumatic stress syndrome in there. And that's fairly controversial. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, of course, experiencing racism regularly is stressful. I think everyone could understand that it is a stressful experience. But what is the type of stress the body undergoes? And that's where science isn't sure. So there's research saying that it's a psychological stressor. There's other research saying that racism, the experience of racial discrimination, results in psychological distress, so a little bit more severe than just psychological stress. And then there's some research that takes it one more step and says actually discrimination results in symptoms of post-traumatic stress, so even more than psychological distress. It's higher on the scale. And so what I tried to do is I measured all 3, stress, distress, and PTSD symptoms. And then I looked to see this relationship I found between racism and prescription drug addiction. Was that relationship best explained by people experiencing stress from racism, distress, or PTSD symptoms? And I found this relationship was best explained by PTSD symptoms. And so this is the first study published to try to understand which of these 3 types of psychological stress best explain this relationship between racism and addiction.
So with PTSD, you also get like physical symptoms from this stress.
Yeah, so what's happening in the brain is the brain is looking at a stressor and trying to decide if it's controllable. If there's something the body can do, the brain's trying to figure it out. Is there something I can do to avoid this stressor or predict it better? So this is what we see with child abuse, why it's so hard on children when they're abused as children physically, because they can't predict the next experience. It's very hard for them to predict. And it's very hard for a child to try to control that situation. It's out of their control. And so the brain says to the child, I'm sorry, but this stressor is not controllable. So you need to be in a state of alarm, a state of fight or flight at all times, because we don't know when this stressor is coming at you again. So the brain cannot stand down. We must stay in a state of alarm. And so this is why we start to see symptoms of PTSD in child abuse victims, in people in war situations where they can't control the war going on around them. So the body stays in this permanent state of alarm. The alarm is going and it's not being turned off by the brain.
And how does that express itself in the people that you were studying with the Aboriginal population?
Yeah, so what I saw was the more people were experiencing racism in different situations. So it seemed to be that, you know, if you were experiencing racism regularly, let's say at work, that was hard on you. But if you were experiencing racism when you go to work, then at the bus stop, you know, people are slowing down. I had women telling me, I'm regularly solicited as a prostitute at bus stops in front of everyone else because of my face is Aboriginal. Like, how insulting is this for people, right? Or you're walking down the street. I had university students say people roll down the car window and shout racial slurs at them. So, you know, you're in public spaces. You're unsafe. You're getting these things coming at you. Then you go to work and you experience some discrimination, let's say, there. Then you go to night classes or you go to the grocery store to pick up some things for dinner and you have the floor walker following you around the store with your kids aggressively and in an obvious, embarrassing way. So these feelings of threat, the more your life was surrounded by these threats, right, that these feelings of racism, that you're not wanted here, that this is not a safe place for you, the more a person's life was surrounded by this. They try to go to their doctor, they experience racism there. There's another situation. So the more their life seemed to be surrounded by racism from all these different places, the more PTSD symptoms they had. It was a dose-response relationship. So, you know, frequency matters. So let's say it was only at work, but it was frequent. That's not good. But what this study really said is it's also the total number of situations in your life that you encounter racism that also can lead to PTSD symptoms, as well as people seeking to cope with these symptoms through prescription drugs.
So what can be done? What does this tell you in terms of how do we fix this situation or what should it imply for better treatment?
And prevention. You know, I think the issue that we have currently in Canada is when we see if there's a health issue that Aboriginal people have more of. We tend to see society looking at Aboriginal populations and saying, what are you going to do to fix your problem? This is your problem. You need to fix your behavior, do this, do that, and fix the problem, right? But what this study suggests is non-Aboriginal people may also be playing a role in some of these health issues that we see in Aboriginal populations, that we need a wider lens, that it's not just pointing the finger at Indigenous people and saying, fix the problems that you have, because they're not the only ones perhaps contributing to them. Now, this is just one study. We don't want to go too far, right? Because science is about repeatability, and we need more research to really understand these relationships. But I still think that we can make the comment that we live in a society, and the health of people living in a society is shaped by that society as a whole, how they're treated within society as a whole, and that if we want to address issues, we have to do so together. We have to look at what role we all could be playing in contributing to health issues that we see within Indigenous populations.
I could see this as well applying to other groups of people where racism is an issue. Do you see that?
Yes, so we have research from all over the world showing that Chinese populations, Latino, African American, Indigenous people in Australia, all different populations, we have a lot of research showing that the more they experience racism, the higher levels of mental distress and higher levels of addictions as they try to cope with that mental distress. There's lots of research showing that to be the case. So this is just another one. What makes this study unique is what I mentioned before, is trying to figure out what type of stress is resulting in the body. So that's sort of what makes this study unique.
It's incredibly important work. Thank you very much, Cheryl.
Well, thank you for your interest.